What's going on, everybody? Paul Hickey here with nooffseason.com. Welcome to the Sports Card Strategy Show, episode 56. I am here with my co-host, Kendall McKee, as always. He's got a stack of just baseball gear in the back, looking good. And we've got a special guest today, Greg Lansdowne. We're happy to have Greg on the show. But before we get into talking to Greg and why he's here, I got a question for everyone. And if you haven't been listening or watching the Sports Card Strategy Show, or any of our other shows for that matter, for the last several weeks, you do not know this question. But if you have, get ready for it again, everybody. Why vault your cards with the original marketplace? Because the eBay vault isn't just a way to protect what you collect. No, no, no. No, 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 my friend, as my son Max likes to say. It's a new way to trade. Not only have your cards never been safer thanks to our secure climate-controlled facility, but you are also locking in real savings. You pay no sales tax when you ship to or transact within the vault, and there are no storage fees for 2 years. Now, just imagine everything you can do with all that money. You can buy soccer stickers to your heart's galore, soccer cards. We're going to talk to Greg about that in a minute. And with the eBay Vault seamless in-app experience, you can track, buy, and sell your cards in real time, from listing your cards in seconds with the eBay collection to tracking trends with eBay Price Guide. Managing your collection is more seamless than ever before. The eBay Vault, buy, sell, secure. Everybody, that's that. And thank you again for joining us. We've got, like I said, my main man, Kendall McKee, and then we've got Greg Lansdowne. So before we get to Greg, I'm going to give a little intro for Greg. We're going to do our loss, our win, and our buy and sell of the week here. And then we're going to talk to Greg about a few things that I've been wanting to talk about for a while. It's going to be a little bit of a World Cup soccer, proper football show, because Greg is the author, among other things, of two amazing books. One is called Stuck on You, The Rise and Fall of Panini Stickers. So that's this book right here. And then Panini Football Stickers, The Official Celebration, A Nostalgic Journey Through the World of Panini. So this is really cool. Greg and I met each other at the London Card Show, and I bought a couple of his books here. And I'm very, very interested to talk to Greg today about soccer stickers, soccer cards with the World Cup coming up. It's obviously very relevant, so it's a great time to have him on the show. Kendall's obviously a big soccer guy. He's the host of our Soccer Card Strategy Show here on the network. So we'll be excited to talk to Greg in a minute about that. But before we do that, let's jump into our loss and our win of the week. I'm going to do mine quick, Kendall, because we've got Greg and we want to leave as much time as possible to talk to him while still giving our audience a portion of our normal agenda here. So there's our graphic for our loss and our win of the week. Mine are, I'm going to combine mine. So my loss and my win of the week are actually two guys. And they're both a loss and a win. Now let me explain. The first guy is Justin Jefferson. So Justin Jefferson is a huge win, obviously, for people who are holding his cards. As I've said, American football cards are the riskiest of the sports card investments. They're the riskiest of the sports to invest in. I think I haven't heard anyone disagree with me on that. That's my opinion, obviously. And the reason I feel that way is because it's such a week by week thing. Like Justin Jefferson absolutely dominated. He had the best catch I've ever seen in my life. Sorry, Odell Beckham Jr. fans. His catch on 4th and 16, I think it was yesterday, was phenomenal. Had Max and I just absolutely going nuts because we're big Kirk Cousins fans. Obviously, I need Toa to get back on the show. My Michigan State Spartan fellow alum. Anyway, Justin Jefferson's obviously a huge win. His cards are up. His base prism is up quite a bit, 56% based on yesterday's yesterday's performance. If you look at market movers, and if you obviously use the promo code NOOFFSEASON, all lowercase, you can get your first month at market movers for only $1. But like, just go to movements and type in Justin Jefferson's name. And it's just like, I mean, overnight he's up, like all of his cards are up, like just a ridiculous percentage. Why is he my loss? Well, one reason is I sold Justin Jefferson. This is actually my sale. So this 130point.com sale, if you type in Justin Jefferson 2020 Prism Orange Laser PSA 10, this is actually my card that I sold. $167, 31 bids, sold it on Monday, September 26th. So that was, I don't know, just after like week three or four, I guess. Mm-hmm. That was my time to sell basically everyone. Like I was liquidating my entire football collection at that time because, you know, Andy and I kind of preach, sell all your football cards in August and September, liquidate it then, crystallize that investment. Don't take the risk of the injury bug. So I still feel good about it, but it is a bit of a loss because I do believe that if I were to list this card today, it would probably go for $250, like easily, just based on who Justin Jefferson is, who he's established himself into. So I'll give you a chance to comment here in a second, Kendall, but my other guy, that's a loss and a win is George Russell. So George Russell, is obviously a big win because he finally won his first career race, which is, I know, something that F1 enthusiasts have been talking about for quite some time. They've been waiting for George Russell to get into the winner's circle, and get that first place finish. Finally get the monkey off his back. So, congratulations to George Russell card holders. I am a George Russell card holder. This is more of a win than a loss for me. I'm still holding a George Russell card right now. And I think this is actually blurring into my buy and my sell of the week. Because the fact of the matter is, with Greg coming on the show, I don't really have a buy or sell of the week. So I'm going to spend this time to talk about George Russell real quick. Hold George Russell. Even though his cards are up based on his first win, I think there's more where this comes from. And he has been so down. I've talked about him on this show as being a buy. He's still a buy, in my opinion. He's still a buy. So I guess this is my buy of the week. Let me just throw the graphic up here. Boom, there it is. Buy of the week. Even though his cards are up after his first career win, do not sell him. I would still buy George Russell. Not sure if Greg or Kendall have a take on either of the guys that I just talked about. Greg, we'll give you some time. We'll let Kendall go next. And then if you have anything to add, that'd be great. If not, we can jump right into to talking soccer stickers. So Kendall, the floor is yours to talk about anything related to your L, your W, your buy or sell of the week.
Yeah, I think my L of the week comes along with the F1 race in Brazil as well. Super excited about Kevin Magnussen getting his first pole sit as the sprint race started. Haas needs some good news going on over there. They're just a struggling team, and for Kevin Magnussen to be able to kind of take off his demons and sit pole for the first time in his career, that was pretty cool to watch. Having a guy just buzzing in the pre-qualifying interviews was super fun to watch, and having Russell sit interview right before him and having Russell talk about Kevin Magnussen, like, you can just tell the mutual respect. Also, I feel like Russell's just like a cheeky little gonna say whatever to the media because he's just like that guy that's probably nice to the camera and probably not nice behind the scene. I get that vibe from Russell, but cool for Mercedes to go 1-2. Not cool for any of us that aren't rooting for Mercedes. Both of my drivers ended up not finishing, so that was unfortunate, but cool for Russell to have his first win, but I think for Kevin Magnussen to sit pole for the first time in his career and to watch Haas get a pole position for the first time as well, that was kind of cool. Although it was just for the sprint, and it didn't end up doing much for them in the actual Grand Prix. So I would say my L of the week is watching Kevin Magnussen not do well technically in the Grand Prix.
Is the qualifier, you know, so I'm still new to F1. I know far more about F1 cards and F1 card investing than I do about the sport itself. So would you say that like the qualifier actually, I mean, this is a dumb question, I might get roasted, but like, does the qualifier mean anything? Like, I know that it means something in terms of pole position, but like, if you're going to win a qualifier and then kind of poop the bed in a race, I mean, does that happen? Like, Kendall, I know you're kind of new to it too, but it sounds like you're watching more than I am. And Greg, feel free to chime in here too, if you follow F1, but I mean, is it anything more than like a kind of glorified exhibition on Saturday? I mean, I know it counts for like the positioning, but does it really mean anything?
Yeah. I don't follow F1 as much as I used to do in the 80s and the 90s, but I can answer that question and say, no, it doesn't. You're not going to buy a card on the basis of someone winning qualifying. You're going to buy a card on the basis of someone winning the race. Nobody remembers who won the qualifying.
There you go.
Cool. Good stuff. Yeah, I was hoping I was not too far off base there. So good to have that.
But I just one other thing, if I can go off on a tangent. The Formula One race did get a bit of publicity over here in the United Kingdom. But I should point out, and it's something I'm sure neither of you are aware of, being based in America, but England actually won a World Cup at the weekend, and it's in cricket. That got a lot of attention. And cricket is a sport that I believe, like Formula One, has massive, massive growth when it comes to collectibles. In terms of the world, there is no reason why cricket should not be selling more cars than Formula One. You've got some of the biggest countries in the world, like India, it's the number one sport in India. So Australia, it's massive, and it's a global sport. And it's always been odd to me that it's a sport that's not got a lot of attention in terms of collectibles. I know Topps are finally getting into it. They're doing another set soon. So it's one to watch. So you say you've only got into Formula One recently. A lot of Americans have only got into soccer in recent times because of the collectibles. Cricket is one to watch, especially in America, because the USA cricket team is being massively developed now. And there's a global competition is going to be played in America soon as well. So as I say, cricket is definitely one to watch in the collectibles industry.
I love that. So Greg comes into the show and has a buy, and it is cricket, and that's awesome. So we need to dig more into that. Maybe we'll talk more about that on today's show. I definitely have some questions. Maybe we can be the first show that I've ever heard of to have a cricket. We could do the cricket card strategy show and have a pilot episode.
Yeah, that'd be
sick. Greg back on. That'd be awesome. Good stuff, man. Cool. Thanks for adding that. All right, Kendall, you got anything else in terms of our weekly agenda?
Yeah, I ended up selling a card of Jordan Lawler this weekend, which sounds backwards because he was in my top 10 guys to be buying right now. I did sell a card from his because it came back from PSA as a 9, as a refractor auto. I ended up selling an auto for him today. I sold it to a buddy of mine. Kind of was just like, I need some kind of move some cash into some last ditch World Cup players, just to kind of reposition myself, trying to save up some money for a Makoko auto. I think he's going to be incredible someday. So I'm curious to see what Greg thinks about him. I mean, he's already incredible. He's 17. He's scoring bags of goals for Dortmund. It's super fun. But I ended up selling a card for him this weekend, and I kind of thought there wasn't a super good comp on it, and I sold it for a price, and then there was one sold later that night for almost the exact price that I sold it for. So I was excited to be on the game there, and a win of the week, man. That I was just gonna say, that Bills Vikings game was game of the year. Like, Kirk Cousins was just throwing it to Jefferson. He was just like praying to God that he was out there somewhere. And then the Bills fumble on the 1 yard line. What is going on? Like, this is the weirdest game I've ever seen. And it was, from a neutral fan's perspective, it was exactly what I wanted to tune into.
Yeah, same here. Same here. We, Max and I, were going crazy. It was late here for us because we're in Spain, but I let him stay up a little bit later and see the end of that game. And we were watching the Red Zone channel, and it was nice to get it in English because, you know, we had the real announcers and everything like that. And it was definitely, I told Max, I'm like, you will never see that happen ever again. I was thinking safety, like intention, like they should have intentionally safetied or just ran a regular play.
They might have been going for that. They might have been going for the safety, but the ball never got to Josh.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe you're right. But then for them to come back and kick a field goal and continue that on, that was incredible.
It's freaking cool. It was a good game.
It was really cool. Vijay Patel, welcome to the show. Good to see you. Greg, do you know what this means?
I'm sure Army, it's a great term.
Okay. Yeah, he's talking about England cricket supporters.
There we go.
I'm guessing that by that name, I could be wrong, but there's a good chance Vijay Patel would be an Indian fan. And it's fair to say that Indian cricket fans are as happy as English cricket fans that we beat Pakistan yesterday, judging by some of the tweets. But
I see.
Vijay can tell us.
Yeah, Vijay is a loyal audience member. Good to have you on the show as always. I think he's Running Card Collector on Instagram. Let me know if I didn't get that correct. We'll take Caleb Nightingale's question real quick, because we still got plenty of time to talk to Greg about soccer stickers, soccer cards, and the market there. Opinions on DJ Moore card prices, hold, buy, sell? I mean, I think he's a hold, probably in just a hold, just because, you know, I think the Panthers are going to end up with a new quarterback in the draft. I mean, that's a long shot prediction, like just my opinion. But I think that you've got a situation where a guy like DJ Moore, who's a very talented wide receiver, still young. We talked to Andy Kaysen about this. I think he would probably agree that if and when the Panthers draft a quarterback, there will be hype around their skill position players and wide receivers like DJ Moore. So, without knowing what his card prices are off the top of my head, I'm not looking it up on Market Movers currently while I'm talking. I can do that if Kendall has a take on this. I can look him up real quick. But, you know, he's a flyer. I don't think he has a super high ceiling, but if you have DJ Moore cards, I would just hold him, see what the Panthers do at the quarterback position, and then there should be some kind of a hype spike this offseason if and when they do draft a quarterback in the first round, or at least fill that position in some way. And then I would sell DJ Moore probably either at that point or in August when the NFL hype cycle gets hottest. And if I'm missing something on DJ Moore news, let me know. But I think this is just a general DJ Moore question.
Yeah, I think Caleb, good question here. We like audience participation coming in, you know, asking your opinion on guys that you might be holding and stuff like that. It's always a good thing for us here at the Sports Card Strategy Show to be able to help out with these kind of questions. Usually our outlook is between the next 6 to 12 months. And I believe that DJ Moore is going to need to be sold in terms of a spike in about a year, which is unfortunate for you. If you're a holder of DJ Moore, what I would recommend is getting what you can out of it, unless you are massively in the hole on the card that you invested in. You bought it at the beginning of the season or something like that. But if you can get out of it now and then move it to another sport, I think you should. The Panthers are a long, long way from being successful. They've got a Baker Mayfield, PJ Walker, just craziness in their quarterback room. It's not getting any better anytime soon. As a Browns fan, I've watched Baker kill my card values as well. So I wouldn't hold expecting there to be a spike this year. If you're going to hold, expect a spike in the off season, but don't expect a massive one. Panthers fans are not shelling out money to be investing in DJ Moore right now. They would probably be more hyped around a new player or a guy that came in free agency. I would say sell for what you can.
Sell for what you can is not a bad strategy. That's what I do. Cause as evidenced in my recent Malik Tillman L in a recent episode, I don't like to hold guys. Sometimes I just the feeling of looking at a card that I don't want to own anymore gives me like anxiety. So then I just sell it. And then it's like better for me. Even if I lost money on it, I don't have that anxiety. So if I owned a DJ Moore right now, I'd probably just wait until he just had a bad game yesterday, you know, in week 10. So I would wait until maybe he catches 5 balls for 100 yards and then sell him. But if you want to try to wait a year, like wait 5 or 6 months, sell him in April or May when the Panthers draft a quarterback, that would be the longest I would hold. The very longest I would hold would be August. I'm kind of with Kendall too. He's only 25. There's no real news with him. There's some deals right now, but it just even with the deals on his cards, if you go to marketmoversapp.com and click on deals, there's a lot of deals I would avoid it. I think there's better places to put your money. So speaking of better places to put your money, the World Cup is coming and it's only like 1 or 2 weeks away now. So I don't know that there's recommendation. I mean, I know there's a lot of people that are going to be buying soccer stickers and soccer cards with the World Cup hype. I know that's going to happen. From an investing standpoint, we probably do have some recommendations for you. But let's talk about Stuck on You, the Rise and Fall and Rise of Panini Stickers by Greg Lansdowne, who is our guest today on the Sports Card Strategy Show. This is a book which inspired the ITV documentary. So, Greg, I'm going to give you a little layup here first. That's a phrase for American basketball. I'm just kidding. Yeah. I'm being totally facetious. I know you know that. Tell us about Stuck on You. This is the one you wrote. You wrote this before. The more recent one is the Panini football stickers, right? So tell us about this one first. Why'd you do it? Like what's kind of the reasoning why you decided to kind of put so much effort into putting out a book like this?
Well, first of all, I think it's worth mentioning that today is the 5th anniversary since the documentary was aired on ITV. So I think it's quite nice that 5 years later, I'm still talking to people about football stickers, football cards, sports cards in general, which says a lot about how the industry has grown in the UK and Europe. It was already massive in America, but in terms of where we were in the UK and America 5 years ago, or when I wrote my book Stuck on You 7 years ago, it's incomparable to where we are now. You came over to England a couple of weeks ago to a London card show, and I saw on your show you were talking about it, and it was quite funny. You saying it's a small show. There's never been a bigger show in the UK for cards than that one.
Eat crow, ball.
Now, of course, hopefully in 5 years' time, it will be a small show compared to where we're going to get. And just looking at the schedule for next year, I see there's a card expo just outside London, which looks like it's going to be bigger than this one. I'm sure the London card show one will grow, and it might actually be in London, because I'm sure because you were staying in London, weren't you?
Yeah, we were staying at Wembley Park, and so then we had to.
So I'm sure you were surprised when you realised actually it's not in London, is it? So this London card show. It's like London Stansted Airport, which is not in London. So I digress on those, but that just shows how things have changed. And And things even changed from me writing Stuck on You in 2015, actually wrote it in 2014, published in 2015, to then it became an ITV documentary. There definitely wouldn't have been an ITV documentary about the book because obviously the title's a giveaway and it's based on the book and I was involved as an advisor, etc. But the reason why I wanted to write the book in the first place was that I was a relatively lapsed football sticker collector. So I collected all throughout the 80s, a little bit of the 90s, but then once I left school or college, adults didn't collect. So at that time, obviously things have changed massively, but they didn't then. So there was no one to swap with. And there was also no internet as well. So you could have found ways to swap on the internet, but it didn't exist. So that also wasn't available to me. So I always kept an interest, but I only collected sporadically and bought cards for my favourite team. But in terms of what I was doing in the 80s, I wasn't even able to do it. And then I was going through my all my old stuff at my parents' and came across all my old sticker albums from the 80s. And I realised that I never finished any of the albums. So I thought, oh, wouldn't it be nice? This is about 2012, so 10 years ago. I thought, wouldn't it be nice to see if I could finish them? So I went on eBay and realised that it was possible. You could even swap. And fortunately, I'd kept some of my swaps. So I was swapping stickers from the 80s with other stickers from the 80s or the 90s. And that was going along well, but going along slowly, because even then, the values of some of the stickers was quite high compared to what I would have wanted to pay. And then the Brazil World Cup, Soccer World Cup came in 2014, and I thought, wouldn't it be nice as an adult now that I can actually afford to buy my own packets to see if I could finish this album? And that would be the first one that I finished in real time. And I enjoyed doing it so much that I finished it twice. And then it got me thinking, well, as I'm a writer, this company, Panini, at that point had just passed its 50th anniversary. It was as big as ever in terms of Europe. It just started to come into America by that point, hadn't it? And I was thinking, well, this is a massive company, but after 50 years, nobody really knows anything about it. Most other companies, they have people who are always talking, but Panini are very secretive. So I thought, well, why don't I try and write the story of Panini stickers, especially as they're as big as ever? There will be a lot of people from the 80s and 90s with the nostalgia value who remember collecting like me. So I started speaking to people who worked for Panini in the 80s. And it became this, I don't know how far you've got into the book, but it became a story that I wasn't expecting at all. It became there were companies battling with each other and doing dreadful things to each other. And when four people left Panini to set up a rival company, the owner of Panini sued them, and he's a big well-known media mogul, Robert Maxwell, in the UK and Europe, and he ended up falling off a boat, which was the only way that he was going to stop suing this new company, Merlin. They then became massive. They were then bought by Topps, and the story just went on and on and on. It was, as I say, I was thinking it was just going to be this fun story about the nostalgia of collecting and opening up the packets and what they smelled like. But it became an industry story. And I know that a lot of people who have got into the hobby over here or back into it in the last 5 or 10 years have said that they've read the book. And I actually know that the Topps managing director who was just employed by the company, he read it before he took on the job. And I also know whenever a Panini employee gets their job, they're given a copy of Stuck on You to read to bring them up to scratch. So I think that's a nice thing to show that it does have some value as a historical piece.
Yeah, that's absolutely great. Kendall, I'll let you ask Greg your question here, and then I'll follow up.
Yeah, Greg, can you talk about, so I've done some sticker collecting, and like you, it was always when I was little, I would feel some of the World Cup sheet, and then I would like never be able to get back to the store. So I just have like 10 players in my album. And then I left it for a long time. Then when I got back in collecting, I collected mostly cards. Can you talk about the rarity levels of stickers and why, like, for instance, I have this Brennan Aaronson red border sticker from the Qatar run this year. But just can you talk about the rarity level of that? Because a lot of our viewers have no concept of stickers at all.
Well, first of all, that sticker you showed really is a change in where we're at with stickers, because in the World Cup albums, every album was the same. The backs might be different colors depending on the country, but in terms of what the sticker looked like in the front, there was the occasional rarity, oddity, and sometimes Coca-Cola would do special stickers, but by and large, it was one collection around the world. So what's happened this year is a complete change. What you're showing me is unique to the American set, with the different the borders and the parallels, which, as I say, completely foreign to World Cup sticker collectors in the past. We've now over here in the UK been given these extra stickers, which are not for the album, so that there's nowhere to stick them, and they're in three different colours, and the rarest ones are obviously worth the most. You've also got your one of ones, which again that we don't have, and which we've never had anything like it. So I think it's important to say first off that this is a complete sea change. And I think the way stickers are going is never going to be the same now, especially with the next World Cup being in America, because I'm sure there's going to be even more parallels. Parallels were for cards, not for stickers. Mm-hmm. So first of all, there's that. Then in terms of the rarity value and how much they're worth, I would say that because stickers were collected in a different way, and because stickers weren't collected by many people in America in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, the reason they hold a value, the older ones, is because the vast majority of these stickers would have had their backs peeled off and stuck in an album. If they didn't have their, if it was a double, then people would still probably pull the backs off and stick them on their school books or their bedposts or whatever. There was no thought that I need to keep this in pristine condition because it might be worth something. That's not how stickers worked. When we got our doubles, we would tie an elastic band around all the doubles and put them in our school blazer pockets or our trousers and take them to school. And so then everybody else is handling them, going through the doubles. And so, again, we've no thought to the condition. All we're thinking of is, do we need this one? Don't we need this one? We need this one. It's going in the album. Not, I need this one, I'm putting it in a penny sleeve. We'd never heard of penny sleeves in the UK until about 10 years ago. So when you see a pristine condition Diego Maradona or Michel Platini or Pelé sticker from that period, it's going to go for a lot of money because they just don't exist. Mm-hmm. Because as I say, nobody had that mindset. So if they do exist, it will probably be most likely that because there are some unopened packets that exist still from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. So if you open the packet, then obviously that's your best way of finding a pristine mint Panini sticker. But that's pretty much the only way, because they weren't built to last. They were built to be stuck in an album. So even if you had a decent condition sticker, the chances of it not having curled within that time, if you've left it in a shed or a drawer, or a damp condition. So mint condition Panini stickers or whatever brand from the 70s, 80s, and 90s for the top players are well worth getting if by some chance you find them, because they, especially with the obviously the retired players, unless they're involved in a scandal, they're not going to do anything. They've had their career, they've had their form. It's not going to go down. So I would say in terms of the rise in value, that there's probably more value to be had from stickers than cards.
So you said 70s, 80s, 90s stickers that are in, you know, like let's even say a PSA 7 or above, something like that would be
absolutely
probably worth getting. Yeah. And were those sets only, did they only make World Cup sets during those years?
No.
Okay, what other sets did they
make? So, and as I say, it wasn't just Panini, but it was mainly Panini. But there were domestic leagues all over the world. So I think you can just about see my Football 78 shirt here, yep. I think. That was the first UK domestic football or soccer album. So that covered the English top division and the Division 2, and it also covered the Scottish top division. And there's always players that came from the Scottish leagues to then star in England or star abroad. So you'd have that album every year. Then you'd have albums in Spain, in Germany, in France, in Italy, obviously, because that's the home of Panini. And then they started doing domestic leagues outside of Europe as well. So every Panini's first album in Italy, it was cards to start with. It wasn't stickers until the end of the 60s. But they've been doing Italian domestic football albums since the 60s, and then it's just expanded from there. So even if players didn't necessarily play in that league, for instance, the first Belgium album from 1972-73, that they had an all-stars section. So you'd have people like George Best and other legends of the game in that. In some of the Italian albums, that they'd have people like Pelé in the late 60s and Bobby Moore. So and these ones are, you know, if you've got to have a lot. I know for Americans, it probably doesn't sound like a lot of money, but you probably have to spend £1,000 or £2,000 to get some of these stickers unstuck now, which, if you'd said that 5 years ago, we would have. There are more expensive stickers as well, but I'm just giving examples of stickers that probably would have been worth £2 to £5, even 3 or 4 years ago. But I think there's also because there wasn't a knowledge, so I don't think many people realised how many Pelé or Bobby Moore or George Best stickers there were out there in, because. Why would anybody know about the Belgian 72-73 album or the Italian albums from the late 60s? Because they were long forgotten. But then all of a sudden, during the pandemic, Americans started going on eBay and looking up our soccer stickers. And that was the game changer. Stickers that we had that we were swapping one for one. Say a Paul Gascoigne Football 87 that we were swapping just for a Leicester City team group. Now, all of a sudden, the Leicester City team group is still worth £1 or £2. But all of a sudden, because it's Paul Gascoigne's first sticker, that's worth £100. If you get it in good condition, it's probably worth £1,000 now. And we were thinking, well, why are these Americans buying these stickers that were worth £2? And so, as I say, that was the game changer, and all bets were off from that point. Everybody started reevaluating the old stickers that they had.
So I have a question. So, and I kind of want you guys to debate me on this a little bit. Kendall kind of will probably already know where I'm going, but on past episodes of this show, I've kind of questioned like, okay, so once the market's established and like, we'll call it vintage, different people define vintage different ways. Kendall and I kind of define it as like anyone who's retired. We just like to say it's vintage. And the reason why is because there's no more markers really for that person, short of like something outrageous that they would do off the pitch, off the field, whatever, good or bad, that would affect their card value or death. You know, unfortunately, yeah. Death is definitely like a marker for investing. We all know that. So, with less markers, in my mind, equals you have to have more patience to see something rise or fall in value. Yeah. Patience is something that I lack. I think it's something that Kendall more has than I do. And so we kind of debate each other every once in a while and have people on the show to talk about like what opportunities lie in the vintage market with something like this versus getting in and understanding like, okay, well, Erling Haaland is not going to be in this World Cup. Wouldn't it make sense to buy his stuff while people are not looking at him, not thinking about him? They're thinking about who's in the World Cup. Wouldn't it make sense to buy his stuff and then potentially sell it when he does have a marker? Like if he wins the Ballon d'Or or if he wins a big award, then you sell Haaland at a, you know, for a profit. Whereas like if you look at somebody like, we'll use Maradona as an example, not much more can be done with his market other than just assuming that it might go up because of he is who he is, but you can't get him cheap. So I guess my question is like, my general question is how much opportunity lies in the vintage soccer sticker market for people to actually get in and make money versus just spend a bunch of money and hope that it goes in the right direction over the long term? What's your take on that?
I think that in terms of the real opportunity, whichever Americans were on eBay 2 or 3 years ago, however long the pandemic was ago, it seems like an age away, but whichever ones were on there buying up Maradona and Pelé and Platini and George Best and Bobby Moore 2 or 3 years ago, they're the ones they're the ones who are really quitting. Now it's a case of how far you think the market is going to grow, and I think it will still grow, especially because the hobby is still probably 90% of America. 4 years' time, the Soccer World Cup is in America, so there is no way the soccer card sticker and sticker industry cannot grow in that time. So if there's a player that has been a big thing in a past World Cup, when the 2026 World Cup comes on, are his collectibles not going to go up? Mm-hmm. So as I say, it's hard to think that you could get a Maradona or Pelé or all these other players who've excelled in World Cups and ultimately lose. If obviously we're assuming that this is why people are. Some people just buy stickers and cards, you know, just because they actually like them, but they're not actually thinking of investing.
Forget about those people on this show. Glad you brought them up.
Yeah, there was someone at the London Card Show who bought a Bobby Moore, who's the England World Cup winning captain of '66, and he came over and was proud of his purchase from the Mexico 70 album. He only paid £30 for it. Now, to me, that's a steal. And I think, and as long as England don't win the World Cup and he remains the only England World Cup winning captain, then his value is only going to go up. Similarly, with when the England Lionesses won the Soccer Euros, they're the first England women's team that won a major tournament. So although it's contemporary, I would imagine that the value of those stickers, although more were bought and sold, I would imagine that their value will go up. But in terms of the vintage, as you say, unless they do something really bad, and you know Maradona can't do anything else in his life, sadly, and he is such an icon, you know, even for England supporters, you know, that by rights after what he did with his hand. There shouldn't be an England supporter who would want anywhere to be anywhere near any of his cards or stickers, but there are, and not just because of they think they might make money of it, just because of everything else he did in his career. So I'm not saying every legend is ultimately going to make a lot of money. They're not, but there are in terms of soccer, they've got to be about, I would say, 20, 25, 30, whatever you buy, they're not going to go down.
Nice.
Greg, Paul, do you have any other leading question there, or can I get on to a new thing?
Go for it.
Greg, do you think the acquisition or potential acquisition of Panini and Fanatics will change the sticker market?
I mean, obviously, if it happens or when it happens, we need to see actually what they have in mind. I would imagine if they bought, I mean, and there's also speculation that it might just be Panini America.
Yeah.
Rather than and in terms of globally, everything outside of America is whereas for Topps historically everything in America was significant, was more significant than everything outside. In terms of Panini, globally, I'm sure there are some people outside of America who don't even know what Panini do inside America, but everybody knows what Panini does outside of North America. I mean, I've got a nephew who's traveling the world at the moment, and in South America, and he was showing me all these swap events that are going on for the World Cup in these communities, and this has been going on for decades, and as it has in Europe and all around the world. So if the Panini brand was kept intact, and Panini still did the World Cup album in the same way that they did that they've done all the other ones for 2026, then I think we carry on as we are. I mean, I think this album is clearly a halfway house in terms of the parallels and the one of ones that we've never had for stickers. So it may be a case of we're being prepared for something completely different in 2026. I think if they did that, a lot of the veteran collectors might say, well, no, I'm out. But that's obviously just for the current collecting. What Panini have done, if they are bought out by Fanatics, what they've done prior to that remains exactly the same. People who collected Panini in the 70s, 80s and 90s will still think of their collection exactly the same way. It will still mean the same to them. And people who are new to the industry should also, if they read up and do their research, they'll also know that whatever happens to Panini in the future, what they've done over 60 years is a legacy that can never be taken away from them. And these stickers, I mean, when I interview players, it means a lot to them when I show them their stickers, that they say, oh, can you send me some of my old stickers? And because they didn't get to see them as much, but now they're asked to sign the stickers, and it means a lot to them, especially when it's Panini, because that is the brand of recognition when it comes to football stickers. And whatever happens in the future, it always will be.
I have another question for you, Greg, but before I get to that, I just want to add to this point, because my take on Kendall's question is, this is like personal, so I could totally be wrong, but the obstacle that I have felt as a consumer / flipper of cards over the last few years living in Europe is that there's a strong division between Europe and America consumer markets that Fanatics could fix, but they would have to do some very specific things. And what I mean is, like, so in America, you have TV deals for all the major American / major North American sports, right? Those TV deals are really what generate the publicity, and then the publicity and the TV deals generate the interest in the sport, and that interest really does drive the card market a lot, because we see it with the price movements day by day, like the stock market based on player performance. Yes, you have like card rarity that definitely comes into play when it comes to like base cards versus serial numbered cards, variations, autos, things like that. And then of course the grading with the pop count. So the ceiling of a card value can be much higher or much lower depending on those factors. But generally you see a player going up and down. And then if you take that and you flip it over to Europe, you've got different TV deals as well. And so what the biggest obstacle that I see is that in America, you're not going to really know the Jeremy Pinos or the Pedris. Like, I mean, I went to the Nashville card show in 2021 and was talking about Pedri, and not one flipping person, Kendall, I mean, you know, you live in Kentucky, not one person in all of the Nashville card show, which no offense to London, because I love the London card show, but the Nashville card show in a high school gym was bigger than the London card show. I believe, Greg, that it will be way bigger 3, 4, 5 years from now. It'll be like, it has the potential to be massive. And I love the London card show. I'm not saying it wasn't as good as the Nashville card show, but just a regular old rinky dink Nashville card show in a high school gym that's like twice a month, just had more people there. Well, not one person had heard of Pedri. And like, to me, that's a problem, because even though the world is massive, like, you still have like these tiny, tiny micro markets. So like, until you can cross promote across the ocean, not only to mix the TV deals to make it easier for someone like me to watch American sports in Europe and to watch European sports, UK based sports in America. I know you can do it, but it's not easy. There's a lot of barriers to it. And then the second thing is distribution. You can't buy anything in Europe or the UK that Americans are interested in, and vice versa. You can't, I can't find anything here that Americans are interested in. So it makes it very, very hard to, even though I can go down the street and I can buy a box of unopened Mega Cracks for like 25 euro and I can sell that on eBay for $100. The profit margin's completely wiped out by I feel like Kramer and Newman on Seinfeld trying to take bottles and cans from New York to Michigan. Like, you wipe out your entire profit margin if you try to take it across in a suitcase, or if you try to with the shipping cost, from one of the. So my point is, like, the distribution's messed up. So Fanatics could fix that. They could fix a very big part of it if they were able to distribute some product into Europe and in the UK. Because I'm at the London card show, Greg, I'm asking everybody, like, where did you get your Cade Cunningham Donruss Optic Red Pulsar? Like, where'd you get that? And the dealer was like, I'm in breaks in America. And so I'm in breaks in America all the time. So I'm spending all this money with American breakers. And then they're sending me all of my stuff all at once. Well, I mean, those dealers are losing a ton of money being in breaks in America just to have one sellable card at a card show. And really, they're not even at the London card show. That's not even really their market. They were kind of lucky that I'm there, or that other Americans are there who care about the NBA, who are going to buy those cards. So I just went on a little bit of a rant. I apologize, but I do think it's definitely like something that I see the opportunity for, and I see where it's going. I'm just a little bit less rosy glow about it, just because I've felt how hard it actually is to make money now with the way that things are. And so I think the information that you've given so far on this show is very, very helpful to people who are more patient than I am. And that actually leads me into my question, which is, if you had to buy, like, maybe give us like 1 to 3 cards or stickers of current players from, let's say, the 2014, 2018 World Cup, or however far you want to go back. It doesn't have to be a World Cup product, but would be kind of interesting if it is. Who would you buy, and sort of like, what example of product would you buy for them? Let's say if you wanted to give somebody a recommendation to make some money over the next maybe 6 to 12 months off of some players. So, you know, like an Mbappe or a Neymar or somebody like that. I don't know. Maybe there's somebody on England's team that you're fond of. But Greg, who would you recommend that people look at right now?
I think, to be honest, you're saying about what stickers would I buy from the 2014 or 2018. It's too recent, because there are so many of them. In so many stickers out there of those albums. It astonished me how much the Kylian Mbappe sticker was going for the 2018 World Cup, and I think that was because there was a lack of knowledge at that time. So I think you were getting a lot of people from America buying up that sticker and paying stupid prices for it, because actually you could, in the end, Panini had to take it off. But to start with, you could buy that as a missing sticker for less than a pound. And even if you didn't buy it that way, just buy a box of the stickers, and you're going to get at least one, probably two. They're out there. There's loads, and I think that's not the case anymore. So that's, Americans have cottoned onto that now. So that's why in America you had to have the parallels and the one of one this time. Otherwise, there would have been probably less interest, because people now know that there's loads of Mbappes out there. There's loads of Jude Bellinghams or whoever going into his first tournament. So there's no value. I would have to go further back. And if you want in terms of World Cup stickers, people have asked me that question recently, and one of the ones that stands out to me would be Thierry Henry from the France 98 tournament. And Americans should know him, having played in America as well. So he's got a bit of crossover there. So his first sticker is France 98, and France won the tournament that year. He then went, he's probably the best player of the last 30 years not to have won a Ballon d'Or. That's no reflection on him. That's a reflection on the judges who gave it to someone else when he should have won it. So if you were to ask for me my top one, I would say if you can get that one in good condition, there I can't see how that. I think as more and more people realise, when they see the viral clips of actually what he did when he was playing, especially for Arsenal, and then people are going to say, oh, actually, people have been sleeping on him, haven't they? So he would be up there. As I've touched on, for as long as England and football, or soccer to you, is it means a lot to us. And I think the whole world realises it means a lot to us. So the fact that we still are searching for a World Cup or even a Euro since 1966 means that team remains as revered as ever. So lots of people go for Bobby Moore as the captain. So he's a good one. And as I say, the fact that someone picked him up for £30, his Mexico 70 sticker, astonishes me. When you see the prices of stickers and cards for players who have achieved pretty much nothing in their careers so far, and you're talking about one of the greatest players ever, you ask Pelé what he thinks of Bobby Moore. There's this iconic picture of Pelé and Bobby Moore in Mexico 70 after they played, swapping shirts. The fact that you can get him, in my opinion, for £30 in a top condition is ludicrous. But I'm not going to say Bobby Moore. I would actually say there's only one player who's ever scored a hat-trick in a World Cup soccer final. That may change this year, but it's very unlikely, because it's very... And if that happens, you can come back to me. But the fact that only one player, Geoff Hurst of England in 1966, has scored a hat-trick in a World Cup final, his Mexico 70 sticker... is probably, I'm sure you could get that much cheaper than Bobby Moore. I would say have a look at his, because as I say, he is another one who goes under the radar, because when you've achieved something in such an icon, the World Cup soccer tournament is the biggest sporting event in the world. To some countries, this one means more, and this country, this one means more. But in terms of the world, it's the World Cup. So the fact that he's the only player, and I'm sure that did you even know that? Have you even heard of Geoff Hurst, either of you?
I have not.
No, well, that says it all. Yep. That someone could have achieved such a great thing in a tournament that means so much to many people, and sadly he's one of the last survivors of the World Cup 66 team as well. I think there's a documentary coming out on him this week. So if you can, it might be on Netflix. If you can get hold of that one, that's worth checking out. I mean, he's played with all of them. He was even one of the assistant coaches for England in the Spain 82 World Cup. And it's just a fantastic life that not enough people know about, in my opinion.
That's awesome. That is phenomenal. Kendall, what else do you have for Greg?
I got one silly question for you, Greg. Who are you a supporter of?
That's not silly. That's especially with the fact that they're top of the Premier League at the moment.
It's Arsenal, huh?
It's a sensible collection. So yes. You could have asked me this question any times that I've been doing sticker related interviews over the last 10 years, and it wouldn't have been as happy for me to talk about. But yeah. this is because of the
World
Cup.
Can't wait to talk about it today.
Well, and especially now because we're on a break. Exactly. It's not even mid-November. We're just about coming up to mid-November, but nobody can take away the fact that Arsenal will be top at Christmas, which is six, seven weeks away. That will never happen again. But maybe if Arsenal lose next week, we might get knocked off, or the week after. Oh no, we can't because there are no games.
Locked in. That's great. Yeah.
So who has the best scran in the Prem?
The best
scran.
Scran?
Yeah.
Who has the best food? Food, right.
What the stadiums?
To be honest, I know there are social media feeds now where people take pictures of their food and it gets rated. Yeah. To someone who grew up in the 80s as a football supporter, it's in England. The food was some of the worst food you could possibly get.
Yeah, so food doesn't exist.
Some of the burgers and the hot dogs. Yeah. It became a joke that if you wanted to feel ill or you needed a few drinks to take away the taste. So because I grew up in the '80s, it seems quite out of sync or to see some of the pictures now. It's like eating at a 5-star restaurant, and it's not even the corporate hospitality. Some of these things that you see, it's just in the normal seats that people are paying £15-20. That's not English football.
Yeah,
I know people have done that in America with their sports for years, but to me, no. I might just bring a Kit Kat or a Mars bar into the stadium, but you have your drinks before and after the game, and maybe a sausage roll outside or whatever. But eating in a football stadium, I think because it's such a short game as well. American sports are long, so you would understand that you need to be fed. But for a lot of football supporters that say grew up, we're not supposed to have good facilities.
Yeah, I've been to La Liga games and just food does not exist. It's not a thing. And there's not even a break to use the restroom. I mean, basically you're in your seat for the whole.
You eat outside of the game. You do that before or after. You don't the sport. You just go in. You watch a game. Hopefully, see a good result. Then, if you want to eat something nice, you exit the stadium immediately and go and find a nice restaurant.
Yeah, there's the footy scran Twitter is just hilarious right now. People showing shepherd's pie that looks like it's the nastiest thing you've ever seen at the game.
Some of the exotic things, as I say, that you see in English football, it's just we're not used to it. So probably the youngsters embrace it more than the people who are nostalgic for the way that we used to watch, that we used to go to games.
I love that perspective.
That's hilarious, Greg. Yeah, that makes sense. Greg, this was awesome. So before we let you go, tell us more about this bad boy right here. It's definitely visually pleasing, aesthetically pleasing. You can flip through the pages and basically go set by set in terms of not only World Cup, but just Italy, Germany, all the countries in terms of like the different sets that have happened throughout the years. But tell us about like your transition real quick from Stuck on You to this newer one, Football Stickers, the official celebration.
Well, one of the things that I wanted to do differently from Stuck on You, to, if I was going to do another book about football stickers, was to make it more visual. The Stuck on You is the story of the industry. There are a few pictures, but football stickers are obviously visual. So the next book had to be a book that had stickers on every page, multiple stickers on every page, with some context as well. But that was what this book wanted to be. I wrote to the publisher, Bloomsbury. We hammered something out, and we decided that we were going to tell the story of, as it was their 60th anniversary, Panini, we were going to tell the story of all the World Cup albums they'd done, all the Euro albums they'd done, all the Women's World Cup albums and Euros, and also the domestic English football albums that they did from 78 to 93, and then the recent Premier League, having got that one back as well. So there's context in terms of the seasons, who won what in those seasons, or who won the World Cup, who were the big players. But I also think it's good for people who are looking to invest in football stickers, because I also put stuff in about who had rookie stickers in those albums and who inexplicably didn't have a sticker. There's lots of examples. So someone like Toto Schillaci, who was the top scorer in Italia 90, he didn't have a sticker in that album because he only broke into the team shortly before. Thierry Henry didn't have a Euro 2000 sticker because he'd been dropped for a long time after 98. And that now looks like an anomaly. Michael Owen is not in France 98, even though he scored one of the most famous goals in the World Cup ever against Argentina, and so on and so on. So I tell those stories because there's every album has a story. Because that book was so successful, we've now sold almost 20,000 copies of that book. Bloomsbury and Panini have now struck up a relationship that they're now publishing the complete works of the old Panini domestic album. So when you were over, you would have seen the 78 to 85 book that I was selling as well. So that's the complete book. 600 pages, every page from Football 78 to 85, and then next year we're going to do Football 86 to 93. So all the stars of that period, Paul Gascoigne, Gary Lineker, Brian Robson, all sorts.
That's very important. Great job. I mean, I think like these are the intricacies that I think sports card investors need to know about. I think they're wondering, mm-hmm. like, where do we even find this information? Mm-hmm. I think like it's weird that it's in a book, but it also makes sense if you think about it, because this is such a market that it's an established market. You can tell the story, and the story's not going to change too much. It's not mm-hmm. something like that needs an app to follow the price guides, or that, like. And it's almost too big for an article or a series of articles online. So the fact that it's in a book form with these visuals, I think it's a great medium to have put this out in. I think it's super helpful. I would highly recommend that our audience pick up a copy. Where would be the best place for them to do that? Is on Amazon, or is there a better place that would help you out more if they buy it online somewhere?
If you're in North America, then yes, Amazon is the best place. I think we were looking for Panini to America to be stocking the book, but that I don't think that's come to fruition yet. But I know there are a lot of people in America who have bought the book and that they have reviewed it, so you can definitely get it there.
Awesome.
Yeah, well, I found it for $18.82 on Amazon. So
$18.82 on Amazon. That's good work.
Good value, in my opinion.
There you go.
I would think so too. I mean, pick up a copy of the book and then you don't have to worry about how to find all this information, how to piece it all together online. Greg's already done that and more for you. So good work there. It's been awesome having you on, Greg. Do you have anything else you want to add for the audience before we let you go?
Just to say that over the last probably 10 years since I started writing Stuck on You, I didn't know, and probably there's no reason why I would have done, but because we never heard about much about it. But I didn't know how big the hobby was in North America, because we didn't see any of the collections that you were doing. We didn't know about, didn't even know card shows existed, because they didn't exist here. So for me to have learned so much from podcasts and shows, YouTube shows like yours has been great for me to help, and books that I've read, the book about the Honus Wagner card and all sorts. I love it, and I'm so pleased that we are starting to get card shows and expos, and that's what excites me, because we can take from what has been happening in America for 30, 40 years, and we can develop that over here and hopefully start to fuse, because at the moment I still see it's a disparate hobby in terms of we do what we do and you do what you do. So I think doing shows like this and having people from America on, or people in Europe having people from America on, vice versa, I think it's so important. Because you can learn so much, and nobody knows everything. And in this industry, you can always learn. So I just hope that we carry that on.
That's great stuff. I would love to have you on with Kendall and I on our soccer card strategy show more often. I think we could really do a lot of good content there, and this has been great. So thanks again, Greg. And this is typically the time in the show where I let Kendall talk about FC Cincinnati or whatever he wants to say to the audience before we sign off.
Oh man, we're so close to the World Cup, guys. It's going to be a breath of fresh air. Like I said, I'm super excited for a World Cup in the holiday season. I think those two combinations will be a really fun thing for family to get around the table, especially here in America. And there's going to be a lot of new viewers to the World Cup for the first time. Probably the second and third generation removed from the people that are right now watching footy here in America. The older crowd will get their first real enjoyment of a World Cup here in America, which will be fun. And I'm looking forward to that. Other than that, Paul, I think it's time for some music.
Let's cue the rock music.
Cue the rock music.
Everybody, thanks so much for watching and listening to the Sports Card Strategy Show, episode 56. Catch you again soon. Paul Hickey from nooffseason.com for Kendall McKee and Greg Lansdowne on today's episode. Have a great day, everybody.